Okay, welcome to a Ben Roman's Rights Extra. This is inspired by a couple of things that I've heard in the world of Doctor Who, where an old man tries to explain to his younger son exactly how wonderful Doctor Who is.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to my son,
Kay,
about what is it about Doctor Who. One of the nice things about this is that for a long time you were pretty not
interested in it.
You just not. Yeah. You just haven't. It was kind of like
it was just.
You had the Eccleston thing. Loved that.
Yeah. Oh, Eccleston was great. Yeah. David Tennant was pretty good. Writing was great, and then, it was good. It was good writing, and then Matt Smith's stuff was sort of. There were a few good episodes where the potential greatness for it sort of emerged.
Right, you're being very polite and about that not liking it.
Yeah.
Are you?
Well, yeah, I didn't like the Matt Smith stuff.
What is it that you didn't like about Matt Smith? It bored you.
Yeah.
Terrible badness. It bored you. That's the worst thing that Doctor Who can do.
It's not.
Is to bore you.
Yeah, it's not really for any particular reason. I could probably sum it up if I went over a few of the episodes again. I might even take it back and be more interested in them. But at the time of watching them, I just wasn't interested. It's not because it was awful writing. It was okay. It just wasn't catching my attention. Which means it's okay writing, but it's not great writing.
Which is funny because there was a lot of effort taken in series 6, 7 and whatever into making the writing interesting.
Yeah.
In a very sort of intellectual way, not an emotional way, where Russell T. Davis in Tennant's era and Eccleston's era really kind of like amped up maybe too much the emotional kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that was really important to the Doctor, because after Christopher Eccleston's one, all the other classic ones that I haven't seen, the Doctor's been established as a character who is, massively intelligent, very, very smart, solves problems, incredibly quickly, saves the world hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And the problem came when he had to deal with more emotional things, less intellectual things. So I thought that's why Chris Robertson's one was massively interesting. David Tennant's one was great because it dealt with the emotions of the Doctor, and he was in love with people, human people.
Uh-huh.
And that was incredibly interesting because this was some massively smart alien being put on the same level as humans, and then what that was like, and having attachment to people.
So how did it? What diminished it when it went into the Matt Smith era? We've got the 11th hour, and we suddenly what went wrong?
There was just no threat to the characters. Rose, one of the characters that the Doctor fell in love with, and then we had the whole follow up with Martin thing, where it was just completely disconnected for that reason of him being in love with Rose and never being allowed to see her again. Despite all the power he had.
So your point is that he's disconnected from Martha because she's the rebound.
That's more in-depth thing, which I'm not going to get into. But his separation from Rose was important because it put the Doctor on an emotional level, and then it said, you can't have this.
Right.
And that tore him up for however long. He kept going on about that, like, I can't have more companions because the same thing will happen. Even with Donna. We're seeing the effects of this thing two companions over. Just massive for the Doctor.
Yes, wow.
And
then
for Matt Smith, we had Amy Pond and Rory Williams throughout.
I already know by your voice
and
that
they,
you've got bored with it. We had Amy Pond and
I might be a bit biased because they're not the ones that I started with, which is that always leaves a bit of bias. But I am still.
Are you trying to be polite about saying they were shit?
Yeah. Basically. But
my boy.
The the presence of those two characters is always there, and there's no threat to them. Rory Williams dies like three times or whatever, gets erased from existence once, and then he's back.
Yeah.
Okay, why is he back? He is.
Yeah.
Thanks,
then, cheers. Don't care. Well, you can do it again. It's like
it's not bad, it's just a different way of saying it, where they say the characters aren't the problems here, the problems are the situations that the characters put in. That was less interesting to me personally.
Right. Okay, now I understand what you're saying, because I think I did get a little bit turned off from... I mean, I'm a huge fan of Doctor Who, going years back. And I'm always going to forgive it its foibles and its idiosyncrasies, but I have to admit, that the Matt Smith era kind of got a little bit cliched, a little bit, you know, here's Rory back again. For fuck's sake, you know, why can't he die properly?
Yeah.
You know, but I think that's a very good point that you were making just there.
I think it's a sort of, I guess it would be called a concession, where they sort of...
Is it interesting to you? Here's the thing. Is it interesting to you that one of the things that we have been talking about is the characters, the companions' characters in Doctor Who, and we have not talked about the monsters. We haven't talked about the Daleks, we haven't talked about the Cybermen.
Yeah, well, this
what's
is
going
the thing.
On there?
This is the thing, because Matt Smith... I'm going to explain this. In David Tennant's things, all his connections with the characters, they have sort of assumed truths in their executions of episodes and things.
Right, okay.
So the way they do this...
No, fucking expand that. What's an assumed truth? What's an assumed truth?
The way they do
this... I'm loving that, by the way. I'm loving the idea of the assumed truth.
So the way they do this is they say, here's the thing we want to explore.
Mm.
That's the variable. Everything else is constant. We don't want to know about that. So, in David Tennant's things, the variable is the characters. We want to know about the characters. Therefore, all the other things, the monsters and the enemies and the episode structure, it's all going to be the same because we want to explore. Not literally the same writing each thing, but it'll be the same sort of structure.
So what you're saying is they set certain things in an episode. That's the constant.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's going on.
And this is the thing about the Daleks and the villains.
They're the constant.
They're the constant of the antagonist. They literally represent hate, and they are the complete opposite of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the Doctor, and then on one side we've got he wants to save humanity, and he wants to destroy the Daleks.
Mm.
There's this massive, you know, whole thing going on there,
which is what
the Daleks
are about.
So what
you're saying is, it's like the plot device to foul.
Yeah.
Is the Dalek is just a thing.
Yes.
There's a substrate of the plot.
Exactly.
Right.
So
the proper story is about...
This is why they've lasted so long, because they're an amazing concept. And people say things like, well, they're flawed villains because they're just evil. There's nothing to them. And there have been episodes where writers have come in and saying like, well, I agree with you. I'm going to try and make them good.
Mm.
Which is...
Twat.
It's not a bad idea. They did it really well in the Christopher Eccleston one. But then
they
excused it brilliantly because they showed at the end that actually, no, he's still a Dalek. He knows he's a Dalek, and he has to be responsible for being.
I'm
going to
destroy myself because I'm clearly still a Dalek.
Yes,
and
I represent evil, and now that I understand that I represent evil,
but
I should destroy myself, which is such a good way of putting it. And people saying things like, "Oh, now the Dalek's good." It's just
that's an interesting thought. It's like, do the Daleks actually understand that they are evil?
Yeah.
I mean, the Master thinks he's evil.
That's,
loves being evil.
Yeah.
He's just like, Mr. Evil, I love it, moi.
That's more really interesting stuff. But the reason the Daleks have lasted so long is because they're a brilliant concept.
Well, I just got dismissed by my teenage son.
No, I'm sorry. There's a lot of stuff to talk about there. And the Master is probably my favourite villain.
Really?
Yeah.
What? This is new Who Master that you're talking about. You're talking about.
Yeah.
Because you have not seen.
I have seen some of them.
You haven't seen Roger Delgado.
I've seen.
You haven't seen Anthony Ainley. You haven't seen the apotheosis of the Master in the Mind of Evil and the Ultron invasion and all that kind of. Oh, mate, you are going to be so.
Yeah.
You get beyond the rats. You get beyond the production values.
Ignore the rats.
You get beyond the rats. You're gonna be in love with the Doctor.
All right. Well, I'll start watching them because I've seen a few of the Master's things. The one where he's like, the Doctor gets that glass thing on his head and the Master tries to like overwrite his brain or something.
Yeah, oh, that's got to be the Keller machine in the Mind of Evil.
Yeah.
I've
seen that. I don't remember it. but
that's Thomas though.
What was I saying? I will watch all of this.
You were saying something very clever.
Oh yeah, so we've got the Daleks, which are a concept, and they're an assumed constant concept because then they play into where the story is going.
Yeah,
you're saying this is a constant threat to the humans, which are a constant thing.
Yes,
you've got the Doctor; his constant thing is the humans that he wants to protect. And his other constant threat is the Daleks, which are always there.
Yeah.
And then we've got a whole bunch of other stuff that they sort of bring in when they want to attack different themes, which is it's a very core sort of structure of writing. And completely gone where I was going
to
go with
it. No, but that's brilliant. I hadn't actually thought of that, because
yeah.
I hadn't realised that what you're saying there is that the Daleks represent this kind of like, this is the substrate, this is the foundation of the story.
Yes.
There's this thing going on, and that the story actually develops on top of that. It's
yeah.
like how, what a twat that John Pertwee is to Joe Grant, you know. I mean, again, I'm mixing up. But,
yeah, no, that's,
yeah.
That's completely right. And what they did with the Matt Smith one was they changed what the constants were up a bit. They said instead the constants, the characters, these characters are flawless because we want to address the story more, which is Stephen Moffat writing. He does this in all of his other stuff, but it's not really relevant. But in Sherlock, he's got, you know, Sherlock, who's perfect, Martin Freeman playing Watson or whatever, who's perfect
yeah.
morality, and then the problem with the stories and the mysteries that develop. So this is very, Stephen Moffat writing is the characters, there's no problem there,
mm-hmm.
but the problems are what happens to the characters.
Really?
Which is why Amy's a really quirky character, Clara's a really quirky character, they're always right, kind of thing. And they've sort of moved away from that, which is super interesting.
Yeah,
but
I'm loving the
comparison. This is what I mean about this structural writing kind of stuff. Yeah, Capaldi's great at the moment. There have been a few episodes which I've been a bit disappointed with.
You won't have picked up on it. I mean, me and Chevron talked about... we haven't yet talked about incidental music, but there's a thing that goes on. I mean, you know it because you and me watched 3 hours of The Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of picked up on the fact that there are certain themes for each character.
Oh, that's brilliant, though.
Yeah.
But that's any more.
But there's a theme
genius.
For the Doctor. There is a theme for the Doctor. A theme for the Doctor. You listen back to it. Whenever the Doctor is dark, there is an Ennio Morricone callback. There is a wow. it's not. Clearly, it's not articulated, but that's basically what's going on. It's like, I'm gonna kill you, motherfucker. You know. And
yeah. Why's that?
Oh, fucking Beatrice. That just kind of works.
Well, that's fine. We can cut that.
Yeah, we can cut that out. but the thing is, it's like so. My son here. I'm 50. My son here is 16, and I'm an old school Doctor Who fan, going through the classic era, growing up with John Pertwee and stuff like that. One of the things that is hugely heartwarming to me is my son quite loves the Doctor, the Doctor Who, the writing, but also has the critical faculty to say that shit. You know, so if you were to say, if there was one particular episode of the new Who that you've seen, because, like, we're 2014, now you're 16, 2005 when you started, you're kind of like 8 or 9, is there any, when did you, I've always wanted to ask you this, is like, when did you stop loving it? When did it suddenly,
stop
liking it? Because you did, you very much did.
In Matt Smith's. One.
Well, clearly, we're talking about Smith, but you very much did. We used to sit down and watch Doctor Who, and we would both be absolutely, me and the other two boys as well, absolutely rapt and loved it. But there was a period, I think it was season 6, my boy here is not going to pick up on the... He's just lost it. I just looked at it and went, meh.
Mm.
Proper meh. But what was it? What... You know, is it like the silence and the tattoos on the things?
I think Moffat was trying to overcomplicate it. He kept bringing back stuff like the Weeping Angels and introducing this sort of constant theme of, oh, there's always this thing which you're going to have to look out, the silence before, which I thought was, you know, mysteriously interesting for a brief amount of time. But then they turned out to be...
Yeah.
What did they do? They sort of appeared under the main villain. And there was an interesting thing there with Riversong being Amy's daughter. But by that point, I'd given up caring about Riversong.
Now, this is the thing.